We're going to take up a little bit, I guess you might call it biographical. And which figure in the Torah would you really be interested in doing a little biography about, getting to know a little bit better?
Yeah.
Huh? Who? Who? Who else? What?
That's
Moshe Rabbeinu? Anyone ever hear of Moshe Rabbeinu?
Heard of that guy.
No.
Who's he?
Okay, we're going to try and find out. So, the Torah really doesn't give you that much biographical information. I mean, I know people have tried to write biographies of Moshe. The question is, to what extent is it really reflecting what the Torah is teaching us? I want to take up certain aspects of his life. Now, take your chumash, please. Take your chumash. Because whatever I'm doing, I'm going to be doing through the text. You know that. I'm not just going to sit here and speculate. The real objective is to study the Torah text to the best of our ability, what we can glean from it. Because that's real. Anybody can speculate. Now, I'm sure you're all familiar. Everybody is familiar with the story of the birth of Moshe. I wouldn't call it the miraculous birth of Moshe, but maybe we will. But more than that, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was even alive. Because at that point in time, there was a decree to kill all the firstborn male children, to cast them into the Nile. And you know the basic story, that let's take a look at the Chumash. We'll go through it together. It begins on chapter 2 of Shemos, which is Exodus.
297.
Right, 297 on the English. And I'll read and I'll translate. Just quickly. It tells us about everything. There's an element of the mysterious as you read it. It's a little bit mysterious. It tells you, it's very strange, that a man from the house of Levi went and he took a daughter of Levi. That's the, well, why don't you just tell us? We know his mother was Yocheved, his father was Amram. And why do we have to know that they obviously they got married? Well, it's a little bit cryptic. Then it says that the woman became pregnant and she gave birth to a son. Now you tell me what is a little bit, I want to see the sensitivity that you're developing towards noticing certain nuances in the Chumash. What's unusual about this pasuk? It says that she saw that he was good, and she hid him for 3 months. What's strange about that pasuk? It's telling us that she gave birth to this child, and apparently she only had 3 months. There's midrashim that say that she gave birth at 6 months, and the Egyptians who patrolled they knew she was pregnant, but they thought that, you know, they had 3 months to go. So after 3 months, then she had to hide the child. That's one. You don't have to learn it that way. You could say that she was able to keep the child a secret, even if the child was born at 9 months. But she was able to maintain a secret. But once the child was already 3 months old, it was difficult. The child was noisy or whatever, and people were beginning to know. The word gets out. Are Jews really good at keeping secrets? That's funny, but we'll see in the story. We'll see in the story itself that idea comes up about secrets. Can people really keep secrets? Now, so what's strange about that pasuk? Would you write it that way? Why did the mother take efforts to save the child? It says in the next pasuk, it says she couldn't hide him anymore, so she took this little basket, a wicker basket, and she smeared it with lime and with clay rather and pitch, and she put the boy into it, and then she put it among the reeds by the bank of the river, and his sister was stationed herself at a distance to know what would be done with him. But isn't it interesting? Why must it point out that she saw that the child was good? Well, what does that mean? What do you mean she saw the child was good? It was a child. What's a bad child? Is this really a bad child? To a mother,
it's yours.
You know, you got to be nice, and you always, you see a baby, you have to say, wow, he's beautiful, or she's good. It doesn't have to be that way. But to a mother, the child, so the implication over here is that the reason why she went ahead and saved the child is because she saw that he was good. Well, first of all, what's a good child? Again, he's 9 months or he's 12 months. If you assume that he was born at 9 months, he's 12 months. So what's so special? Okay, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
She saw that it was good. But anyways, let's continue. What would the method that she used to save him? She puts the, what was the plan? How long can a child exist like that? A child has to have constant care. Has to be nursed. There's the danger of animals or Egyptians will just take the basket and kill. That was the decree. So it's not clear what her plan was, yes?
I don't want to be totally off, but it reminds me of Genesis, of God created this, and he saw that it was good.
Ah!
God created this.
Very interesting.
I don't know.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting. I think that one of the commentators says that. Or I think I made that comment. It's very familiar. It sounds very familiar to me. Well, I'm a commentator. Anybody can be a commentator. You know, it doesn't... But seriously, that's a good point. I think I took it the same way. Remind me to come back to that point. I'm just sort of laying out the terrain now. Okay, it's not clear what the plan was, right? Obviously, there must have been a wisdom. She had some hope. Unless it was complete desperation and just praying for a miracle, could be. But if that's the case, so keep the baby in the house. You could pray for there must have been a better chance this way. Let's continue. Then it says that, wow, look at this. A stroke of good fortune. At any moment, things can change. Because it says that the daughter of Pharaoh went down to bathe by the river, and her maidens were walking along the banks, and she saw the basket in the middle of the reeds, and she sent out her maiden, and she got it, and she took it. So it piqued her curiosity. And then she opened it, and she saw the boy, and he was a crying baby, and she took mercy on him, took pity on him, and she said, "This is one of the Jewish children." Very interesting. Very, very interesting. Why does the Torah have to point that? Again, take a look at the pasuk, the sentence. Try to look for that thing which is a little bit unnecessary or superfluous. Because the Torah is not giving you too much information. It's very stingy with its facts. Very, very stingy on the information. So why do I have to know? The baby was crying. All babies cry. Is that a big deal? So if you were even writing a novel or a book about this situation, you wouldn't have to point out he was crying, unless there's some significance in the fact that he was crying. But what significance is there? As I said, that's what they do. They cry. So he was crying. Right? Anyways, then the Miriam comes into the picture. And the sister said to the daughter of Pharaoh, "Shall I go?" So she jumped in. That's a very important lesson. She was waiting, and this happens very often. You don't have a chance, and in retrospect, you can read and you can plan. Sometimes things happen, and you got to seize the moment. The opportunities come along, and very often we're too lazy, or we're not in the mood, or that's not the way I imagined it to be. I thought it was going to come about in a different way. That's my fantasy, but if you use your head, maybe it's not working according to your fantasy, but you've got to act. See, she springs into action. She sees an opportunity because this person apparently has tremendous sympathy and she's interested and she's taking the baby. So now this would be a jackpot if not only the baby is saved, but we can get the mother, indeed. So she runs and she said, "Well, you know, it's a Jewish child. Should I get a nursing mother from the Hebrews? And she'll nurse the child." It's interesting that she was a nursing mother from why from the Hebrews. Well, probably or perhaps in that situation there were many nursing women from the Hebrews because the children that they had were being
slaughtered
and so they could nurse. It's a tragic kind of situation, but that's what she said. So she says, "Go," and she went, and she called. Of course, she called the mother. Did the daughter of Pharaoh know that this was the mother? And then the daughter of Pharaoh said to the woman, take this boy and nurse him for me, and I will pay you the wages. And the woman took the child and she nursed him. What would you say from that? What would you say about that? From that verse, could you deduce whether the daughter of Pharaoh knew that it was the mother? Good, why not? Good, why not? Tell us your thought. No?
I've always
been confused. Okay, I'll see if we can unravel some of it. I would guess that not, because if she knew there was the mother, why would she have to pay the mother to nurse her own child? So they kept that a secret. They wanted to that Yocheved should be the nurse. They wanted that.
She could also be punished because she didn't follow. I mean, her
she
child
could be
is
punished.
Alive.
Yeah, she could be this punished and so forth. So the ruse was that she had a child, the child was killed, and she could nurse. She'll nurse this child. Otherwise, why pay the wages? Also, if she would know that it was the mother, she'd be reluctant to give it to the mother because the mother might want to keep it or hide it, whatever, and not give it back. And at this point in time, the daughter of Pharaoh really wanted the baby. So that was kept a secret. Interesting. Why all this is so significant anyways? Why do we have to know all these details? What is it telling us about Moshe Rabbeinu? Anyways, let's continue. Then it says that the lad grew. Now there's two expressions of the lad grew. The first one means he was weaned. He didn't have to nurse anymore. So this would mean he was, how old would he be? How old was the child when he's weaned?
6, 8 months?
No.
Like three.
At least 2 years,
oh,
right?
Then.
Three? How old?
I know
about
four.
Four? It's getting a little bit, you know, it's time already.
I see it.
You know?
That's a little too close to actually.
Well, so, all right, let's do whatever the case. Two, three, even four. See, he's not that old. This is important. I want you to remember this point. He can't be too old at this point. Okay? So now he leaves, he's weaned, and where does he go? He goes up to grow up in the house of the Pharaoh, in the palace. Why is that important? Why is that important? Who is directing? Who's the director of all these events, that everything should happen in just this kind of a way? I mean, you clearly see God. This is clearly divine providence. You understand it's divine providence. You saw it in the crying. That's why it tells you the crying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead, Jennifer. Come on.
Yesterday we learned in the Shemon Esrei that Hashem, when he has to take pity on you in order to show compassion. So she was the same way. Like, she showed pity on us because we're not entitled for anything. Like, the boy wasn't entitled for anything. So she was like in the image of Hashem.
Very good. I would suggest also that there was a lot of resistance over here, yes?
Why are we not told Moshe Rabbeinu's Hebrew name?
We will be told. One second. Let's get there. Hold it. Let's get there. We didn't get to the naming yet.
I thought we were there already.
No, we didn't get to the naming part yet.
Oh, there's the naming part.
Yeah. The Torah will tell us about that in a minute. Just give me... I wanted to point out this factor. In my opinion, the crying is extremely important because she was caught in a conflict. You see, there's a certain reluctance. She's curious. This was a very special woman. And I would say that indeed was the plan. The plan sounds crazy, to take a baby and put the baby in the reeds. It's a dangerous kind of a place. What are the chances? Okay, we're supposed to do our best and not to rely on miracles to the extent that we can. This is my theory. I would venture to say that it was not an accident that suddenly, out of nowhere, the daughter of Pharaoh arrives. Some of the rabbis say that she had a place, a bathing house over there, a little beach house or something. Now that's something that people would know. That this is, it's not the first time that she did it. So they were, and they must have known about her character and her nature. Her nature was someone, you see, sometimes the daughters of kings they get involved in causes with children. So apparently she was sympathetic to children, and it would seem that she was opposed to the decree of her father. But she was in a conflict. On the one end, this is the law of the land. The decree. So how can I go against that? On the other, so she's in a state of conflict, and that's what the Torah is pointing out. But what pushed her over the line was what?
So the crying.
The crying. That's why it says that. It has to be. Sometimes you're in a conflict. That one extra emotion, because women have a very powerful maternal instinct. But on the other hand, I can't do it. What am I going to do? How am I going to tell my father? It's going to be a whole big problem. So if something can occur that brings that emotion, he's just adorable and he's crying, that crying did it. Sometimes it's the quantitative factor in the emotion. And that was, well, who determined, did the rabbi say? The rabbi say that Gabriel came along and smacked the baby at that point, smacked him in the face, so he cried. What are they saying? What do they mean? You have to take that literally? They mean that it was a miracle, that God saw to it. God has ways. Whatever it was, something stuck the baby at that point and he cried. But that crying was something that did not come about as a natural thing that babies cry. God saw to it that he would cry. Interesting. Now, so let's go down to 10. It says that the child was weaned, and they brought him to the daughter of Pharaoh, and he became a son to her. This is very significant, yes?
This is a very basic question, but...
when someone's a wet nurse, like the baby would have to live in the house with
right.
the mother, right?
Right.
So for
right.
for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Okay. Alright.
Is that?
So the baby was not living
with
the Pharaoh's daughter.
Not for the first 3 years. Not as long as it was weaned. Yeah, that's what she said. Take the child.
Right.
Take
okay.
the child. Now she called his name Moshe. Without getting to the naming part. She called his name Moshe, and she said, Kimin Amayim Mishisiyu, because I drew him from the water. Now, why? Okay, so that's the name Moshe.
So 3 years later, he's just getting his name now, or what's his name?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know when. That's a good point. Maybe he didn't have a name before that. Maybe his mother called him something else. Okay? Some nice Jewish name. But the point is that. No, this would indicate that she adopted him, and when she adopted him, she now, as the mother, she will give the name. Now, the name is a very interesting kind of a name. Why is it so important? Why is it such a prominent thing? The Torah not only tells you the name, but the reason behind the name. Apparently, in Egypt, in Egyptian, that meant, the name Moshe, in Egyptian, meant that idea. I pulled him from the water. That's a very significant point. We're going to try and find out what's so significant about it. What is the significance of a name? That's another aspect of the story, the significance of a name. Okay, so this is the basic background. Now, but nobody answered my other question, and that is, what is so important that he grew up in the palace? He grew up in the palace of Paro. It was very, very important. Again, you see the workings of divine providence. Yes?
Is regarding the future story, or can I...
What's so important in general?
Well, he didn't really assimilate. He still felt connected to the Jewish people. We see it later.
We'll soon see that he's still... Good point. But Moshe Rabbeinu was destined to become the greatest prophet of the... He's in a class by himself. No one ever reaches that level of closeness to God. In terms of direct prophecy without any intermediaries and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Well, also he gained the greatest secular education of anyone
right.
around, being in the royal court.
Right, very important. That he was exempted, also not only that, but he was a powerful individual. He did not suffer from any kind of a slave mentality. He was rescued from the slavery as well. He didn't participate. Now, that shows his greatness, in the sense that even though he wasn't a slave, yet he comes to the defense of the Jews, right? That's important. But also he had access to the best. Egypt was the most advanced society, so he grew up as a free person, and he had the best teachers in the world. So therefore, he was a genius, being the genius that he was, that combination was vitally important. It enabled him to reach a very, very high level that otherwise he wouldn't have reached. So that's the early background of Moshe Rabbeinu. We're getting some information. Okay, now let's continue. Now we're going to read about two episodes that occur. The Torah is just going to give you two incidents in his life, and that's what the Torah sees fit that we need to know about the character of Moshe Rabbeinu. Continue with me, please. And it was in those days, Vayigdal Moshe, and now Moshe grew up. That's the second growing up, which is that basically he reaches manhood, which is bar mitzvah. Okay, we don't know, again, the Torah doesn't really care about the exact date. How old he was he 12, was he 13, 14, whatever it was, around there. He's a man, and he's going out on his own now to see what's going on. And he went out to his brothers, and he observed them in their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian man was striking a Hebrew man from his brothers. Now, what's interesting about this pasuk? What do you notice about the pasuk? I'm trying to train you to notice the extra words, the nuance, what's unnecessary in the pasuk. Yes.
Well, it mentions Hebrew man, then it re-emphasizes brethren.
Brethren, twice. Why is it? How many times do you have to tell me? We know already who's the brothers. It says he went out to his brothers, right? And then, who are his brothers? The Hebrews, the ones that were being enslaved. And then he sees a particular Egyptian beating up a Hebrew man from his brothers. That's clearly a repetition, right? Yes, I'm sorry. You don't think it's a repetition?
No, I mean, I think it shows that he recognized that the Hebrew man was his brethren.
Well, don't you get that point from the first part of the pasuk, when it says he went out to his brothers? He recognized that they were his brothers. Okay? How would you explain it? How would you answer it? It's there. That clearly demands an explanation. It's calling your attention and saying, explain me. There's a lesson over here. Yeah, it's telling you something about the nature of his identification with his brothers. There's two distinct levels. There are those, some people don't want to get involved. They stay home. They don't have any, whatever, they distance themselves. So Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't like that. Moshe Rabbeinu, in spite of his privileges and his opportunities, he didn't, that's a great thing. It cost him a great, he basically gave up his freedom because of his brothers. He did not deny his brothers. And he even cared about them to go out and see. Okay? That's one level of brotherhood. Now, there's many, he's not the only one, there's many people that would take that first step. But then when you see that this particular guy is getting hit, and you can't just sit and observe, I'm an observer, we'll make a study, we'll do a study. That's the typical reaction. Okay? We'll commission a study. Yeah, that's very nice. But when you have to actually intervene and risk your life and do something, is he still your brother? Is he still your brother? Ah, that's enough. He's not, that's a different level. I'm not prepared to do that. I care. I'm going to observe. He could have gone home. I'm going to make a report. In fact, I'm going to submit a request. The Paro, can we review the... That's what I'm going to do. But he's not that much of my brother. He's telling you, right? He was still his brother. He wasn't just his brother when he was a group that had to be observed, but when he needed personal attention and he had to get involved, he didn't turn his back. That's a real brother. That's what the Torah is telling you about. That's the true test. It's easy. It's easy. We can support Israel. We can go to the parade. It was a nice parade. Did you go to the parade? Right? And then you feel good. You're a real supporter of Israel. But what if Israel needs more? What if it needs some money? Well, not yet. I'll go to the parade. I'll go to the parade. I'll go to a protest. Is there a protest? Yeah, I'll go to the protest. But we need some money. Yeah, I'll go to another protest. You see? It's not the same thing. They're important, but not that important. This is even bigger. Let's say you had to get involved. Let's say the army. Let's say they needed you to go there and pick apples or something while the soldiers go out to war. Are you ready? Are they still your brothers? Is it still a cause? Is it still important? There's different degrees. Okay. Now, what does Moshe do? And he looked all around. This is very important. He looked all around and he saw that there was no man. And he smote the Egyptian and he buried him in the sand. Well, what do we see from this?
He left
not a pacifist. Moshe Rabbeinu was not a pacifist, right? He did not really apparently believe in dialogue too much. Apparently he felt that there's a time when you have to take action, and he took sides with the Jew. That was his brother. He was the victim, and he could not tolerate that injustice. He stepped in and he killed him. Yes. And then what? The next thing, of course, is got to get rid of the body. But he looked around first. You see that it wasn't just an impulse that he couldn't control his anger, because it's telling you that it was deliberate. He thought about it. He looked around. He studied the situation. He acted with a certain calmness. And his mind dictated that this is the correct thing to do. Yeah.
Well, I was actually about to ask the exact same thing, so we covered it.
Yeah, so Moshe Rabbeinu is a warrior. All of our great rabbis, well, if the situation presented itself, King David, were great warriors. So the great individual is someone who has tremendous knowledge, but there are times when he has to fight. And that's a very, very big mitzvah when the situation presents itself. So, okay, that's day one. Quite a busy day. Then he goes out on the next day. The next day, and behold, now what does he see? Two Jews are fighting. See, because the Jews don't have enough enemies out there. They always need more enemies. Yeah.
This time he doesn't say his brother.
Yes, that's a good observation. Very good observation. I like that. Well, really, you could answer and say it's not necessary anymore because we've made that point. But no, you've got a point there too.
They're
not brothers, exactly. They're brothers. It diminished the brotherhood.
Yeah,
when they departed,
the
when the Jews, in this kind of a situation, when you're being, usually that brings you together at least. When you're being oppressed and there's a need for unity to fight against the common foe, they're fighting against each other. That shows that there's something wrong. The rabbis point that out. So, your point is well taken. So what does he do in this case? Again, Moshe Rabbeinu was not the kind of person that stood on the sideline. When you see people are doing the wrong things, you're supposed to go in and challenge them. Of course, it's not politically correct. But who said that you're supposed to be politically correct? Okay? So Moshe said to the wicked one is the one who was about to hit the other guy. Lama sakareyecha, why are you hitting your friend? He's your friend. What's going on over here? Vayomer, and he said to him, Misam chaliyish, who made you into a man? A sar, a master, and a judge over us? Are you thinking to kill me? Just like you killed the Egyptian? And Moshe was very frightened, and he said, behold, the matter is known. Now, what is difficult about this? What's the question that just jumps out at you from the pasuk, from the page? Yeah.
Yeah, he saved Ratchet and Mount.
Well, that's the question. How did he know? Moshe looked around. Okay, this is the question. Let's just state it as a question.
The man he saved blabbed his friends about what happened.
Okay, that's interesting. That's a good point. How many people were aware of that? Because the question is, how did this guy find out about it? Yes? You're correct. It has to be that way. Go ahead.
I agree with
you. Yeah, it has to be that way. Isn't that amazing? Because Moshe Rabbeinu looked around and there was nobody there. You can't say that he made a mistake and that somebody really was there. Then the pasuk would point out to you that he missed someone. So there were only two people that knew about it. Moshe knew about it and the one he saved. And Moshe, of course, didn't tell. So it had to be that this guy... But why? Why would he do that? Did Moshe Rabbeinu tell him to keep his mouth closed? Closed? I didn't say shut. You know, closed? What do you know? Why not? I'm sure he did. The Torah doesn't have to point that out. So why on earth would this guy go and tell? What, was he just a crazy person? Someone did such a tremendous favor for you? Someone did such a tremendous favor for you? And you'd go out and rat him out and get him into trouble? Is that what happened? Is that really the story? Yeah.
It was the prince of Egypt that saved him. It was not just anybody. It was one of his fellow Hebrews who was trying to protect him. This is the big guy.
Right. And therefore, so why did he do it?
He was amazed that this guy would come forward on his behalf. He wanted to let all the other people know. He was Egyptian prince Satan.
Okay, so he didn't have... Did he have a bad motivation in doing it?
Not necessarily. Maybe this is the beginning of a turnaround of their situation that they've been facing in slavery.
Okay. Okay, good. Go ahead.
He was more of that, not so much who did it, but there was the fact he's part of the slave mentality.
You mean he did it because he felt he has to report it to the police?
No, I mean, he told the people. It's not like he is in the right...
But why is that a slave mentality?
To think like, okay, I have the freedom to make the choice not to say anything. He's such an oppressed person. The fact that somebody did something nice for him doesn't even register.
No. I hear what you're saying. I would tend to agree, however. You say, can people keep a secret?
No.
That's the point that you're making. How many times have you been disappointed? Because when something significant happens to you, it's impossible if you have to share it with someone. If something really big happens to you, but you can't tell. So you're faced with a tremendous dilemma. Because it's of no value if I can't share it. Think about that. If something really great, or you met this guy, or you made this job, or you got this money, whatever, something great, you gotta tell somebody. Because man can't keep a secret. It's not real. It didn't happen unless people are going to know about it. That's part of the enjoyment. You got to go. You run to the phone. There's always some person out there that you're going to share. You went to a job. You got a big promotion. Unbelievable. You got to run to a telephone. There's always that certain... Usually there's more than one. But what's that?
Post it on Facebook.
You can't keep it. But let's say they tell you to keep your mouth shut. You got to tell somebody. You'll take a stranger on the street. You got to share it. You've got to tell. You say, and how many times were you disappointed when you told someone, and you told someone, and you said, but you got to understand, you can't tell anyone. And there are people, I don't want to sound sexist, don't get me, but I think women tend to be like this, I know, that their idea of a secret is, I can't tell anyone except one person. There's only that one person that I can share with. That's not breaking the secret, because I only told one person, and I told her not to tell. And the truth of the matter is, she has the same idea of a secret. She only told one person. And before you know it, everybody only told one person. Perhaps men are as bad, but the inability is something worth thinking about. Because that can be an extremely dangerous thing. I would say I agree with you. This person just couldn't keep it to himself. The idea he's a slave, and he was getting beat up and he was getting killed, and this, not just anyone, the prince. the son of the daughter of Pharaoh, he intervened and he saved my life. So he had to tell somebody, but don't say a word. I don't want to get him in trouble. He's a hero, but he's got to tell. That emotional inability to keep it to yourself is what can cause lives. It can destroy lives. We laugh about it because we're innocent. I'm sure there are many times you were upset that things that you thought were safe with certain people did not remain. They couldn't. They got it out. Am I wrong? You've been hurt that way. Go ahead.
I don't get, though, why the man sounds like angry at
Moshe. This guy.
Who appointed you a dignitary? And who made you a
dignitary? Yeah, because, that's another thing.
He's the same guy that Moshe said.
He's not the same guy. No, he's not.
I don't get it.
That guy has gone home. Listen, we'll do a play. We'll do a play. We need somebody to act.
Because
he's not
justified in
this. Day one, you know, you be the Egyptian, you be the... Okay, boom, you're gone. Wait, day two, these two are arguing. This is day two.
No, because these guys thought they were justified.
And I'm intervening. You're fighting with each other. Now, they hate me. Anyone, the inability to take criticism. That's another defect that we see over here. How many people have the ability to hear a criticism? He was butting into their situation. He was calling him a Russia. If you act this way, that's evil, that's wicked. So the guy couldn't take it. These were significant people, it turns out, among the Jews. They thought they were leaders. So who are you? Now, they had already heard the rumor. And then they turned against him threateningly. Oh, you plan to kill us? Just like you killed the Egyptian? Meaning, we'll take care of you, which is indeed what they did. Moshe Rabbeinu's life was put into jeopardy because one person couldn't keep a secret and the others were people who spoke Lashon Hara. Evil speech. Slander. They slandered him. That's the worst sin. To maser a Jew. It's called to give a Jew over to the authorities. To give a Jew over to the authorities. That's what they did. Because take a look at the next passage. So Moshe said, was afraid, and he says, I see that the matter is known. By the way, the rabbis say, I see that the matter is known, has a reference, a deeper level. I see the matter. I couldn't understand why these people deserve to be enslaved more than anything. He was studying the whole situation. Now I understand, because he saw the defect of the people, that instead of uniting to oppose the enemy, they were fighting against each other. I'm sorry, what did you say? I'm sorry, did you want to say something?
I'm just completely confused, because did they even know that he was a Hebrew? How would they know that? So why would they...
How would they know,
Didn't they just think he was the Egyptian prince? I don't know.
Did they think that he was a Jew or not? That's a good question. I'm not sure at this point in time. Whether that became known.
Much bigger. You would think that if nobody could keep a secret, then Miriam wouldn't have been able to keep the secret
Let me ask you a question, though. Now that you raise that point, this is the main question. How did Moshe know that he was a Jew?
His wet nurse.
He was a kid. Okay, so maybe he remembered? Is that what you're saying? He was not raised by the wet nurse. He was raised by the daughter of Pharaoh, which we established. He was nursed by his mother, and when he was weaned, we don't know, say he was 2 years old, say he was 3 years old, is that then he was raised. As he became 4 and 5 and he had education, he was an Egyptian to all intents and purposes. If he was an Egyptian to all intents and purposes, how would he even know that he was Jewish? But let's assume that he remembered. Let's assume they told him that when he was, before the daughter of Pharaoh took him away, he had an Egyptian name. Let's assume he remembered. But what kind of an attachment is he going to have to the Jews? Does that justify this? Does that explain this? He didn't just... You know, plenty of Jews in America are completely assimilated. They may know that there's Jewish blood. They may know. But they have no... They're not going to identify with the Jewish people. It's meaningless to them. Unless, of course, there's Kirov, you know, and then they study Judaism and they... That's a transformation, right? But why would Moshe Rabbeinu have this kind of feeling? The Pasuk is telling you that this was important to him. These were his brothers. He risked his life to save his brother. Then he goes and he rebukes the two Jews. He cared. You're telling me on the basis of something that when he was 2 years old, 3 years old, that's enough to explain this? Is that realistic? Yes.
Well, one of the questions is, when it says that he went out with his brethren, did it mean he went out to see his brothers, or was he just seeing justice and he stopped it?
Well, it's a good point. It wasn't just justice. It was justice as it expressed itself. There was a personal connection. It says his brothers. And it says it twice, as we said. He really cared. And where does that feeling come from? That feeling doesn't exist unless you really identify as a Jew. You're raised as a Jew. It's important. There's many Jews, by the way, there's many Jews that are religions or so will not demonstrate this kind of love. So for someone who had no upbringing, he was raised as an Egyptian. How do you explain that kind of thing? Isn't it difficult? And indeed, later on, well, we know that Moshe identified as a Jew. Later on, when he's the shepherd and God, the message, God speaks to him, and to go and tell them to the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of their fathers, it's assumed that Moshe knows all of this. He has all this education. And then he said, well, Moshe demurs and he's resisting. So God said, because he's quite bad, because he had difficulty expressing himself. You know the story. So what is God? God says, okay, I'll have Aaron. Your brother Aaron will be your spokesman. Your brother Aaron. So he knew that Aaron was his brother. You're telling me that's because he remembered when he was 3 years old? And so on and so forth? It's very hard. It sounds very difficult. There's something missing from the picture. Now I'm going to try and solve a mystery. Okay? A scriptural mystery. Who I didn't speak? I want to give a chance to those who haven't spoken. If not, I'll call on you. You're into this thing?
Yeah,
you ready? Okay.
No, please, go ahead.
Let's go.
Didn't he feel like he was Jewish when he was crying when he got out? Like he was saved. And so now, maybe...
He was crying? But he was only like 9 months.
So he felt
12
maybe
months.
He felt he was Jewish then.
You're telling me?
You
an experience that 12
Rashi.
Months time is enough
you
to make you Jewish and you remembered it? Wow, that's pretty cool.
Well, the crying, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but all babies cry. It was just that God sort of did he cry at that particular moment to evoke the... That look, I'm not saying it's impossible, but we got to try for something better than that. Yes?
Was he circumcised?
That's a good question. The rabbis say on the verse that she saw that he was good was that he was born circumcised. That's one rabbinic interpretation. But if you accept it, fine. But even so, I mean, the fact that he would notice, but that is that's. Let's assume he had a regular circumcision. I don't know if that's the case. I'm not sure if the daughter of Pharaoh allowed that because he was a Jewish child and so forth. But again, all that would mean is that he knows that through some accident I'm Jewish. But what do I care? I'm an Egyptian. My whole life, my whole culture is Egyptian. What do I care about them? Okay, one more, because I want to continue the search.
Okay, so maybe it's Bathsheba herself, the daughter of Pharaoh, who saved him, knowing that he was a Jewish child to start with, and told him along the way that he was Jewish.
And raised him to be a really thinking and proud and caring Jew? Could be. Does that make sense? I'm going to try and... Well, you see, your answer is a good answer. I don't mean it's not a good answer. What I'm trying to show you is we can speculate. We can sit around and speculate, and everybody can come up with a theory. Okay, so that's your assignment. I want everybody to go home and write a theory. No, and it could be brilliant. But that's just your theory. I want to work it out from the textual references, from the text. What do we find? What is the Torah telling us? That's what I want to do. Okay, so join me. Let me proceed a little bit with this search. How did Moshe know that he was Jewish? Now, as I was saying, the name. A name is very, very important. The Torah tells us not just the name of Moshe. We have to know the name of Moshe, right? But it's also telling us the reason behind it. She didn't have to name him Moshe. I mean, there's whatever. It could have been other factors. But she chose to name him to commemorate that event that I encountered this child. This child was in the water, would have drowned. I pulled him out. I saved his life. That's really what it's saying. I saved his life. Now, you will see also, by the way, the second story, which I can't go into in detail right now. The second story is when he leaves Egypt and he goes to the well and the daughters of Yisro are being chased away by the shepherds and he intervenes again. The same idea. And he saved them. That's how he met his wife. Because the girls come home early and the seven daughters and the father says, why?
Home.
Yeah, why are you home so early? And there's an Egyptian man. Egyptian man came along. He's such a gal. Wouldn't you know? Like a guy like that. You know, a guy that's really in danger, right? And this hero comes along and dries off the enemy. A whole gang, not just there. He's taking on a whole gang. That's the kind of a person you should look for.
No one.
Well, go by the well, you know, get some sheep, you know, and well, what are the sheep? We'll see. Now, in the Torah, that's a good place to meet guys. That's where Eliezer found Rivka.
It's equivalent to a bar?
Yeah, very good. A watering hole. That's the very good. Very good. That's the watering hole. They just don't go in there with sheep. They don't go there. Now, leave your sheep at home. That's the thing. Yeah. But seriously, what gave... So she said that this Egyptian man, and he gives them an argument. So you let him go? Go invite him for a meal. And the rabbi said, there's an implication. That's a good... You should invite him for a meal. It's a good shidduch opportunity. So... What gave Moshe this special characteristic? That he was an individual that dedicated his life to being a Moshiach. A Moshiach means a savior, so to speak. I don't mean a savior as the Christians do. I mean, someone who helps others, who saves others. Could it be that the name has an effect upon him? The Torah maintains, this is very important, when you have children and you give a name, today it shouldn't be like, you know, trivial. Today people like to give fancy names because... You see in the Torah that every name represented an idea. Eliezer, he named his child Eliezer. The God of my fathers saved me. When they gave a child the name, it had a significance. Yitzchak, people will laugh at the miracle that that God did for Sarah. Every name, why is that so important? It's important for yourself, but it really has an impact on the child. That is to say, for example, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the great rabbi, you know, the one who did the decisor of Jewish law. The name Moshe was important to him. He identified with Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who gave over the Torah, who taught the Torah, who decided the questions of halacha. It had a big impact upon him. So that's important. You should think about that, and then the child will be curious. A child will be curious, why did you give me that name? Sometimes you'll name him after someone, could be in the family, because that person has special qualities. And that will make him curious about that person. Hopefully. I mean, in and of itself, having a great name is not enough, obviously, but it's a good factor. Because it shows what we value and what's important. And if that's my name, it'll be something special to me. That's why it's important for every child just to have a Jewish name. Just to have a Jewish name, if nothing more. In addition to an English name, fine. But a Jewish name, because you use it, that will remind him that he's Jewish. Now, what is the idea of the name over here? The idea of the name is, as the Sforno explains, that Moshe doesn't just mean pulled him up. It's in the future. He will do that. In other words, the idea was that he should be dedicated to this idea of saving others who are. Just like I saved him, because she took mercy on him. And he was a victim, and he was oppressed. And he was marked for destruction. And it was a big deed that she did. As we said before, there was resistance because she had to oppose the whole policy of her father. And she was driven to do it. And she did that act of saving. So he should know. Because of that, people tend to identify if they've suffered from something. If you have not suffered, very often people get involved in different diseases. Why did he pick this disease? And Jerry Lewis is muscular dystrophy, and why this one isn't cancer, and why the other thing. Very often, because they're all important. Why should you pick this one over the other one? You'll notice, if you ask the people, they'll tell you something in their own background. Either they had a child who suffered from it, or a parent, or they themselves. If a person had cancer and was cured, they have a special sensitivity. They're much more like, because they know what it's like. They've been there. So a person who was oppressed, who was a victim, and was saved, that person, and that person was named. That's my name. That means that I have a mission. Because I went through it. Well, that's what the Torah is always saying, that we should not afflict the stranger, because you were strange in the land of Egypt. So we have to have a heightened sensitivity. Because if nothing else, we know what it's like. When you don't know what it's like, okay, you still should be concerned, but it's not the worst thing in the world. You didn't experience it. So Moshe Rabbeinu, that name was very, very important to him. In terms of his forming his whole makeup, that I can't just be indifferent to people's suffering. That's why as soon as he got older and he had the ability, he went out. He knew that there was a policy. But he knew that they were his brothers. Not only did he know that they were his brothers, he cared. He had a brotherly feeling. From whence did that come? Here's what I want to say. I want to suggest a theory. Of course you can disagree with me. And that is that it was also a matter of divine providence. That she would give this name. She could have given other names. as we saw, babies cry. But the fact that the baby cried at that opportune moment, that was divine providence. Because all this was the will of God. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, according to the Rambam, was a special creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God. That is to say, he was a human being. I don't mean to... But the abilities that he had, the components came together in such a way to enable him to reach the highest level, which nobody else would ever reach again. So in order for that to happen, you had to have someone who had all of the requisite abilities. So God, so to speak, designed the gene pool, whatever it is. Of course, it was up to Moshe. He has free will. He had to, no matter what talent you have, that's a very important point. You can never, ever rely on your natural endowments. You've got to cultivate it. But, as I said many times, there are certain things that we all have limitations. Like, I can't be Rabbi Soloveitcher. We all have limitations. But, so if you have that combination, you have certain talents, and you appreciate it and you cultivate it to the maximum, that's what we have over here. Now, how would Moshe Rabbeinu discover that he was Jewish? Is it by accident that the sister was watching? And she saw? And she could have gotten another nursing. Well, what difference? After all is said and done,
she kept watching.
She kept watching. And then she tells her, I'll get... And she gets the mother. So he was, indeed, he was in the earliest years, he was weaned by his own family. He was taken to the house of his family. Okay, but as I said, so what? It's not going to help. But then he leaves. Then he leaves. One second, let me just conclude. Then we'll have, if we have time. He's taken away. And I'm saying whatever memories were there, I don't think, I could be wrong. If you want to suggest that that was powerful enough, I would say no. It wears off and he's raised as an Egyptian. But Moshe Rabbeinu, when he got older, was very, very curious. What would he be curious about? The name itself says, he knows he's Jewish. The name itself says that I was, Mom, Mommy, what's this name? Moshe, what does it mean? Pulled from the water, what? Tell me the story. So what's she going to tell him? Oh, that you really are not my biological child. I adopted you. And what the circumstances were, that you were left in the water. She told him the whole story. So right away he's learning the story that there was a decree against the Jews. Right? That's why now he's learning that fact. He had to. He's curious. Every child that's adopted is curious about his origins. So now he learned about that fact, that there was a decree, and whoever's parents really tried their best to save him, they put him there, and I'm the one that came along. It was a miracle. So then what we'd ask, who are my parents? Who are my parents? Now, would the daughter of Pharaoh know who the parents were? No. As I said, Miriam didn't reveal that. Miriam couldn't reveal that this was the mother. And indeed, the pasuk is telling you that she paid the wages. And then she took the child. So now the paying of the wages becomes very, very significant. Because he's curious. He's curious to find out anything about his past. His mother can't really, really tell him much, but he goes on a search. Now he knows one thing, that his own mother did not nurse him. His adopted mother didn't nurse him because she couldn't nurse. She wasn't nursing. She wasn't her child. So then every child had to be nursed. So who would nurse me? Who would nurse me? Who was the nurse? Ah, well, let's go to the records. There was a payment. There's a receipt. Whatever it is, he could direct her. So I'm theorizing that Moshe Rabbeinu had this discussion with his mother. And everything, all the factors were present to enable him to trace, to go back to his roots. Because there's that very, very significant development that it turns out that the real mother of Moshe Rabbeinu, unbeknownst to the daughter of Pharaoh, indeed was his wet nurse. And that could be traced. We could find that woman. Let's go there. Go. And he goes. He goes to the village and he knocks on the doors. Are you the one who nursed me? He doesn't remember at this point in time. How's he going to remember? But he has this whole story because the records show where the nurse came from and there was a payment made. So the king and the queen kept records about all these different things. Ah, then they took him in. Then they took him in and they told him the whole story and who he was and what he was. And how old was he? I don't know. He could have been 6. He could have been 7. He was precocious. And they are the ones, divine providence in my opinion. Because you see, when he gets older, he really cares about the Jews. The fact that now it's reinforced by the fact that he was one of them. He was earmarked for destruction and he was saved by the daughter of Pharaoh. But as I told you, that wouldn't be enough. He went home, and when he went home, he got his Jewish education. And then when God speaks to him, he tells him the God of your father's God. He knew all of that. And from his parents, and from his sister and brother Aaron, he knows who Aaron is. Because God says to him that Aaron, your brother, will be your spokesman. So Moshe knows all about Aaron. That's why I'm saying, that's my theory, that divine providence arranged it in such a way that Moshe was able to trace back the chain of circumstances and discover who his true parents were and what the circumstances were. Thereby, they would imbue him with the knowledge that he needed, and with that feeling of brotherly concern that he loved them, he identified with them. And as soon as he got older, and they told him about how evil was the oppression of the Jews, so then he went back. And I'm saying he didn't just go one time for a visit. He probably would continue, would go up and back and hang out with them and learn with them and study Torah, whatever it was. So he was really being raised as a Jew at the same time. God, divine providence worked it out. That the very king, the very oppressor, and he, because everything is under the control of God, the individual who was oppressing, he was the one who provided all the facilities that were needed for the Savior of Israel, for Moshe Rabbeinu. He grew up in the house of Potiphar. That's what I'd like to suggest. Okay? But the reason, you see, you might have your own theories as to this, but any theory you're going to give is just going to be based on your own suppositions. Mine too is, but it's rooted in the information that's being given to us, little bits of information that as we read them did not have any significance. Who cares that you paid the wages? What do I care? Oh, it becomes very, very important. Who cares that the name Moshe? Why is that? Well, the name Moshe is very, very important, A, in molding the personality of Moshe, but also in seeing to it that Moshe would have that curiosity to find out his story. He's got to know. What do you mean I was in a river? I was placed in a river. That's how I came into being. How can you not be curious? So that's why I'm suggesting this possibility, that all of this, again, was the result of divine providence. But divine providence is significant, but it's only if that individual who is aware of it, who's cognizant of it, who recognizes it, and man has to use his free will. God did not predetermine, God predetermined that the child Moshe would have these qualities. He predetermined that when the parents acted in that way and put him in that situation, then he would be fetched. He'd be fetched. God worked that out. That's got to happen. And all the other factors got to happen. But at that moment in time when he's out there and he sees a Jew being attacked, that doesn't have to happen. God didn't predetermine that. That's your choice. You see? One has to be cognizant. You can't say everything is basher. People like to say that. Because in a certain sense it sort of relieves them from the need to make the correct decision. We like that. We like it when things work out well. Well, sometimes when it works out well, it's not so by sharing this because I really did the right, you take a little bit of credit. When things don't work out so well, then you say it was by sharing. So then you can find some hope and some consolation in it. In other words, I didn't botch it up. It just wasn't by sharing. But the truth of the matter is that it's both. That there are certain things in life that are by sharing, and a person has to know how to deal with those things. They don't determine the outcome. You have to know how to use your basharet. Utilize your city. Because in every situation that God gives in terms of basharet, there is the capability of you utilizing it for the good. That's what a person always has to do. To use his free will to choose the good. Yes. Question? Did somebody have their hand up? Go ahead.
I have a question. I think it's interesting that if he was able to go back to his family enough times in order to secure...
The knowledge.
Knowledge. I find it interesting that the Egyptian mother or whoever allowed that to happen. So obviously he fell on people who would be enough sympathetic, he's just an adopted son, of course we have to let him go back to his biological family and study from them. But didn't they feel also threatened by that?
That's a good point.
Why is no one stopping?
That's an excellent point. But it does appear that Basia, the daughter of Paro, was a very sympathetic person who did not agree with the policy of the father. So she may not have told the father what was going on. That's not something that has to be public. He would leave. He would go visit these people. To the extent that he shared it with his adopted mother, the daughter of Paro, those are things you're getting into details that I don't know. The Torah really doesn't give us that kind of detailed information. But I think the Torah does give us enough to try and work out the major issues. Yes?
So in your opinion, what was the reason for Moshe crying?
The reason was because it was needed to evoke a higher element of sympathy, which pushed her over, and she had the strength. Now, I'm not going to let this kid go. Without that crying, she could have walked away. Sometimes you know how it is with an emotion. You're caught between two opposing emotions, right? And then one extra thing, you know, you were going to enter. Let's say you see someone, you know, hitting a child or being mean to a child, and it bothers you, this and that. But it's a certain level, and you walk. And then on one way, you see the kid crying in a certain way, it evokes something that you can't. Now you can't walk away. Okay, that's what it means. The Torah wouldn't have included that unless that was essential. And the rabbis say that the angel came along and then tapped them on the face and caused them to cry. What they mean to say is that God brought it about. Maybe it was a mosquito buzzing in it. I don't know what it was. It doesn't matter what it was. But it means that this was something that was part of the divine plan. Okay, everybody. See ya. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Oh, thank you. You're going to do it. Make it sound right, you know. All right. Thank you. That's it. That was a hit. Curtain calls.